We're starting at the bottom of Lamed Amud Bet. The Gemara is continuing to explain the Mishnah that we said at the bottom of the Amud. And we're now bringing a brisa to support the explanations that we've given until this point. So the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hochi, a brisa that supports these positions. Matza Talit V'Kardum, person finds a beged, right, some sort of clothing, kardum, like a hatchet or spade. Basratia is a large thoroughfare, a main road, Rishut Rabim. Upara ratza ben akramim harizu aveda. So if you find these items, which are clearly avedot, if they're found out in the public thoroughfare, as well as a para, which is ratza ben akramim, that's running around inside the vineyards, harizu aveda, then it's an aveda. Talit bitzad geder, kardom bitzad geder, upara ro'e ben akramim. It's one girsa that we have. The gra amends the girsa to read ro'e ben asavim. Right, but the... if you see a piece of clothing up against the fence, as well as a kardum, a hatchet up against the fence, or a spade up against the fence, which means that someone looks like someone intentionally left it there. If they intentionally left it there, then the taking it or trying to return it is probably going to be to their detriment, because they'll come back to look for it over there, and better to leave it rather than to pick it up. And we discussed earlier, or Tosfos also discussed this idea of things that are items that are somewhat shamur. That these aren't, they're not in a perfect location where they're completely secure. On the other hand, they're somewhat secure. And if they're somewhat secure, and we assume that the Balim left them there intentionally because it looks like they were placed there, then we're going to leave them because there's more likelihood or a better chance that the Balim will find it when they come back to get them from that location, rather than having you move them or remove them from there. Now, the last piece is the pararo ebin akramim. If the para is just grazing in the vineyards, then we don't consider that to be an aveda. So, ein zu aveda. Now, gimel yamim zechazeh. If this happens for 3 days in a row, or it remains there for 3 days in a row, harizu aveda. It's not clear, the gimel yamim is not clear what it's modifying, but assuming it's modifying the entire seifa, which is both the talit and the kardum by the geder, and the pararo ebin akramim, then harizu aveda, it's classified as aveda, which supports what our Gemara was suggesting before, that after 3 days, even though a behavior might be considered normal, or maybe slightly unusual, after you get to 3 days of this unusual behavior, then you know the animal's lost. Because then we no longer classify it as being a yotze dofen, as, you know, a one-day event, or a little strange, but then we consider it to be out of the ordinary. Once it's out of the ordinary, we classify it as an aveda. Ra'a ma'im sheshotfim uvayin. He sees water, a flood, a torrential rain, or something coming down that's going to flood the field of his friend. There is a goder bifnehem. Person should try to dam the river or try to block the water from overcoming or flooding his friend's field. So Amarova, Rashi says this is miltabav v'nafshehi. This is an independent statement. The Rabbah is basically saying the same thing that this Brisa just said, which is the chol aveidat achicha, or both aveidat karka. Chol aveidat achicha, any loss that will be caused to your friend, you are responsible or you are obligated to take care of and return to him. That includes even his land. I mean, not simply non-real property, movable items, but even real property that's stationary, that you're obligated to protect his property and protect it from being overcome or overrun by water, by flood. And therefore, that will also be a form of returning the Shabbat to Veda. Amalei Reb Chananya the Rava, Tanya the Misayelach. We have a brisa that supports your position. Ra'a ma'im shishot v'im uvayin arizeh goder bifnehem. Right, the brisa that we just saw. Amalei im shumha lo tisayeh. If you're bringing that brisa, that doesn't necessarily support my position. Because achumai skinan b'di'ika umrim. I can explain the brisa in a case where there are items that are in the field. And it's not necessarily protecting the field itself. It's protecting the grain or the accumulated harvest that's in the field itself. So it doesn't have to be the land itself, but rather things are on the land, right? Okay, then what's the chiddush? Right, if he's going to protect the items that are on the field, of course there's, you have to do that. You have umrim that still need the land, I mean that they still are somehow dependent on the land itself. I would have thought because they still rely or dependent on the land, they have a classification like the land itself. Kamash Malan, that they are not like the land and they're independent of the land. So, Rav is not changing his din. He's just saying that this braisa is not necessarily a proof to my position, because I could explain this braisa if I had to. I could explain this braisa not like my position, not supporting my position. So I won't bring this braisa as a support, although Rava still believes in his position that aveidat karko is considered aveidah, and you have to protect it. Okay, now, where it says, matzach hamoru para. So where it says, we have a steer, an internal steer, a herd gufakasha. Amart, matzach hamoru para ro'in baderech. You find them grazing or, walking along the public thoroughfares, ain't zu aveidah. Ro'in baderech hu dolo avi aveidah. If they are just grazing or sauntering along the public thoroughfares, then they're not aveidah. Haratzah baderech, v'ro'eh ben akramim avi aveidah. If they are running, right, bolting around the Rishut Rabim, or they're simply grazing in the vineyards, then it would be lost. That would be classified as lost. Now, Ema say, but what about the second half of the Mishnah? Chamor v'keilav hafuchim, right? Only when the chamor looks like its load or its saddle is turned over. Parah ratza ben akramim, and a cow is running through the vineyards. Harizu aveda, that's classified as aveda. But the deal, what you would be medayek from this is, ratza ben akramim, who, tahavi aveda, only when it's running, right, along through the vineyards is a problem. Ha ratza baderech, if it's running in the reshut rabim, or ro'e ben akramim, or simply grazing, sauntering in the vineyards, in zu aveda, that's not aveda. So what our Mishnah only addresses two extreme cases, which is what Rashi calls tarte liriuta, where there's either everything is good, or everything is bad. The Mishnah addressed the case where he is grazing or sauntering through the Rishut Rabim, there where it's in a place where animals are normally found, plus his behavior is indicative of normal behavior of an animal. Over there, the Mishnah says that is not an Aveda. On the other hand, when you're found in the vineyard, already being in the vineyard is somewhat questionable. Why is the animal in the vineyard? And on top of that, it's running. Right, it's running through, it's bolting through the vineyard. Those are two behaviors that are unusual. There the Mishnah says, that is an Aveda. So now, what the Mishnah does not address is the two cases in the middle. A case where you have a single item that is out of place. For instance, running in the Rishut Rabim, or grazing or sauntering in the vineyard. The Mishnah never addresses that. So those two cases in the middle, depending on which side of the Mishnah you start with, you will be medayek to the opposite side. So basically, the Gemara says, gufakash, but Gemara is basically saying, what is the din for those two in-between cases? So Amar Abaye, Yagid Alav Reo, that his friend will tell the story. So what does that mean? Abaye says that it's Lav Dafko. The Mishnah is Lav Dafko, and this is how to read the Mishnah. Tano, Roe Baderech, Dolabi Aveda, Vuadin Roe Ben Akramim. Grazing, the determining factor here is the activity of the animal, not the location of the animal. So the Mishnah, what says Roe is grazing, sauntering, that activity or that action is what makes it into not an aveda. So therefore, it doesn't matter if it's on the derech or in the kramim or in the vineyards; it will not be an aveda. Tana ratza ben akramim, and the other activity, which is running, that is an aveda. That's whether it's in the vineyard, avi aveda, or din the ratza baderech, and that's similar to if it's running along the way. So Abaye says that the hadgasha, the emphasis of the Mishnah, is on the action, the activity of the animal. Irrespective of the location. So if it's running, it's an aveda. If it's walking, sauntering, grazing, then it's not an aveda. Similarly, Rava, iyagida la breo. If the explanation of the mission is like you Abaye, the mission should have done something totally different, which is that it could have given the
bigger chiddush.
Right, give the bigger chiddush, and we would have known the second one. The mission does the exact opposite over here. Litne kilta, right, the one that's the kula. Choshken chamirta, and certainly the other case. Litnei Ratza Baderech, running in the Rishut Rabim is considered an Aveda. Davi Aveda, but Koshkein Ratza Ben Akramim, then of course I would have known running in the Kramim is an Aveda. But Litnei Roe Ben Akramim, and describes, again, sauntering, grazing in the vineyards, and then the Lavi Aveda, that's not an Aveda, then Koshkein Roe Baderech, and certainly an animal that is wandering around Rishut Rabim calmly is not an Aveda. The fact that the Mishnah didn't do that is indicative that the division is not simply along the actions, but even on the locations. So, Amar Rabba.
The same deal that Abaye did, you could go regarding the locations.
Right. So, Amar Rabba. Rabba says, Ratza aratza lokasha. Running on running is not a question. Ha, the apa le gabi dabra. Ha, the apa le gabi mata.
So he gives a different explanation.
Yeah, totally different explanation. He says, no, that the action itself is not determinant. right, here, but rather the type of running that you're doing. I mean, that in the field, when you are running, you can be two different types of running. You can be running towards the city, or you can be running away from the city. So if the animal is running towards the city, then we don't classify that running as being lost. So when you're medayik from the ratio, when you're medayik from the ratio, that ratza, right, is not a problem. That depends which way it is running. And the other way also, right, again, there's two types of damage that an animal can do when it is in a vineyard. When it's in a vineyard, it can do one type of damage, it's damage to itself. There's another form of damage, which is that it can actually damage the property that it's in. It can be trampling the vineyard in which it is contained right now, or in which it's moving around. So now, right, so when it's said in the Mishnah, when it is grazing or walking, sauntering in the Rishut Rabim, that's an Aveda. Haro Eb Bin Akramim, implying that if it is Ro'e in the Kramim, Havi Aveda, that we're talking about is Avedat Karka. We're not worried about the animal itself, we're worried about the damage the animal is doing to the Karka, the Sadeh, the vineyard, that where it is now. So that type of Aveda, that's what you are Chayav to ensure is not lost. And therefore, when it says that it was running in the Kerim, it was simply walking around the Kerim, that's about the animal itself. The animal itself is not considered lost, right, when it is calmly walking or moving around the vineyard, because that's normal behavior for the animal. On the other hand, if the animal is calmly walking around the vineyard, but also happens to be trampling and getting caught and ruining some of the vines in the vineyard, then in that case you are chayab to ensure that the vineyard is returned to its owner. So you have to remove the animal so that the vineyard remains or is not an aveda anymore. So if you're addressing different issues. Why? Deratza bin akramim maskuva. Rashi actually on the Mishnah says this, that why? When he's running amongst the kramim, he gets caught. We had this word maskuva before by the chamur, right, by the saddle, but it gets scratched up, it gets wounded by the vineyard itself, or by running. By running, it gets caught in the vines, or in the wires, or in the stakes that hold up the trellises. On the other hand, when he is sauntering and walking through the vineyard, they don't get caught up in these things. Even though it doesn't get wounded or cut, typically, right, so that's the, what about the issue of avedat karka, right? So fine. If you have a issue, or don't have an issue with the behemah, you might still have an issue with the karka. So Mar says, bitukuti, right? When it's a field of a non-Jew, so therefore there's no obligation of a Shabbat Aveda when it comes to a non-Jew, and therefore we're only looking, or only focused on the animal itself. So Mar says, v'tipuklei mishum avedat gufa. Right, so if that's the case, if this is the situation we're going to set up, then why don't we worry about losing the animal itself? The dimakatluba, they might kill the animal. If the animal's ruining their field, right, and it's walking through there and getting caught, you know, stop trampling on a couple of their vines, they might just kill the animal because no loss to them, and they protect their vineyards. So Mar says, the ba'atru dimatru. It's in a place where they warn you before they kill the animal, before they are going to kill the animal, and then afterwards they kill it. Mar says, but dimatruba. Maybe they already warned him that he has to watch his animal and make sure he didn't come. If that's the case, then the animal's, it's open season on the animal now. So Mar says, id atruba, if they already warned him, lo izdaruba, and or right, he didn't take it back, or he didn't take care of it, then it's aveda midat. And that then he's vada aveda midat. Then the person himself is giving up on this animal because he is aware of the fact that this animal has left. He's aware of the fact that it's causing damage in other places, and yet he hasn't made any efforts, or he hasn't successfully contained the animal. That's the case. Then he's right. Aveda midat. It's free. It's a free rule on him, on his animal. If it gets killed, it gets killed. Here, it's the balim's fault. Right, not there's no obligation of a Shabbat Aveda because basically he's mamafkirit, right? He's given up ownership by the action, or the way he is interacting with this animal is indications that he is not so careful about his baluk over this animal.
That's a minute, I mean, you would say, oh, b'chol mikre, it's a chayav.
Yeah, it's getting
injured. Mr. Beth. Right? Okay, so what's this? Right. It also has nothing to do with direction, right?
Correct.
So, but when I do the deal, so So if you have a suddenly here now, I do put in the...
Because I have a steer on the diuk. I have no idea what to do with it.
Right, so, but I guess you could say that the parallel between the direction that it's running in Madera and the Karmim is that both indicate a case where it could get hurt, or you know, it's running away from...
I would say if it's running away from the city, it's going to end up in the Karmim.
Or certainly in a place where it's not going to be protected.
Amalu! Somebody, zero barcha, zero barcha. Right, if he keeps on returning it, right, he's still obligated to return it over and over again. So I'm going to help me draw a bundle of us. So this is going to have a series of these questions, and we're basically going to go through the whole Torah of these double lishon note of verbs where a person is obligated to take a certain type of action. So I'm going to help me draw a bundle of rava. Ema shev chadizima tishivim treizimne. Right, exactly. A shev tishivim. You have two times that you're obligated to bring back, and that's it. So he says no. Rabbi says back to no. Amrele hashev afilu kuf peyamim mashma. That the word itself, the verb itself, hashev, independent of tishivim, is you have to return it 100 times. Doesn't matter how many times. Hashev means return it, no matter how many times. Now,
if I only want it once, what would I expect the Torah to write? I mean, what?
But if the Torah wants to obligate you once,
why do we say Hashem is not coming? No, Hashem is
pamachah. I don't say another term. I think the Torah would have to qualify it's hashev, the verb. Hashem just means return it. It never limits the number of times you have to return it. If you want to limit the number of times you return it, then the verb has to be qualified by the Torah. And say Hashem, Ayipam Rishona, has to do something that would qualify
the
verb.
Interpretation is
right. It's just every time you're obligated to return it. I mean, the Torah doesn't limit the number of times you have to return it.
I think that's what the Torah is going to say. He's saying it means 100 times.
No, but it means 100 times. Not the word itself, necessarily, but in the context of where it's used, it means 100 times because there's no limitation to the way the verb is present. So it says, I'm like a shave, a filu kufa mi mashma. Tishivain. So what do you need the extra tishivain to teach you? I only said to his house where it's a, he knows it, no, not even just mishumar, because we're going to see a second that ginato and chuvato have to be mishumar, but the balim are aware that you returned it. Alright, that's what beito is. The ginato or chuvato, return to his garden or to his, you know, empty area, to his fields. Minayin, how do you know that's enough? Tamalomar, tishivain, mikom makom. As long as you've returned it, that is sufficient. Hey Chidami, what's the case? If these are places that are Shamur, Pshita, why shouldn't you be able to return it to his location that's Shamur? You're returning it to a location where it's secure now. So Idalo Mitra, if they are not secure locations, Amai, how can you return it there? The animal's going to walk straight out again. That doesn't work. So Lamar says, Olam Dimintra, it is a place that's secure. That we don't require you, in returning a Veda, we don't require you to notify the Balim that you've returned the Aveda. Look at the Rabbi Lazar. Damar akol shuchim dat balim. When it comes to all the shomrim, Rabbi Lazar says you need that balim. When you return the object to the balim, you must indicate or inform them that you have returned it to them. Chutz meshavet beida. Sefer hashavet tavash. The Torah ripta shavot arbei. That the Torah, because of the extra tishivim, says that any form of return is sufficient, even without the knowledge of the balim, without the balim knowing that you have returned it, that is considered a return of the Aveda, as opposed to by the Shomrim. When you return an object, whether it's a pikadon or whether you borrow the item, the returning that object requires that balim to terminate the relationship that you have or the responsibility you have as a Shomer over the object. Now, the Gemara is going to go through numerous double lishonot like this. Shaleach tishalach, right, this is by Shulach HaKain, right, Ema Shaleach chado, zimna tishalach, trei zimna. The same thing again. She'll only be required to do it twice. Amalei, shaleach afilu mea peyami mashma. Means, in right, any number of times, you have to keep continuing to do it. Tishalach, enli the davar arishut. I thought only when there was a davar arishut, I would have to send it away. Davar mitzvah minayin. How do I know when it comes to davar mitzvah, I also have to send it away? Amalei, amar, tishalach mikom makom. You must send it no matter what. What is the mitzvah over here? So Rashi says that it's the tzipor mitzorah. You need a bird to be mitahera the mitzorah. So what would you think? You would think that I don't have to do shluach hakein when it comes to, if I need this bird to do the mitzvah mitzorah. Right, the idea that since it's that only when it's me, when I'm doing it for myself, then I need to shoo the mother bird away. But if I need the mother bird, right, and I need it for a mitzvah, the Torah is demanding or telling me that I should take this bird for the mitzvah, maybe I'll be patur from being shaleach away from the name. My guy says, no, that you still have to shoo the mother bird away, even in the context of the mitzvah. So I'm going to help me, Rabban the Rabba, ve'ema hochiach chadazima, tochiach trei zimne. When it comes to tochacha, when it comes to rebuking one's friend, you don't have to do it two times. If you see somebody doing something wrong, twice will be sufficient. So I'm like, no, ocheach afilu kuf pe'amim ashma. I rebuke endless amount of times until the situation is rectified. So what are you going to do with tochiach? In the arav had the talmid. That's only that the rebbe is obligated to mimochiach his talmid, his student. Talmid the rav. How do you know that the student also is obligated to rebuke his rebbe? Meaning that if his rebbe is doing something wrong, obviously he has to say it in the proper way, he has to do it out of respect, but he's still obligated to indicate to his rebbe that he has done something wrong. Minayin
tochlamar. He's doing it directly.
Right. That tochiach means anyway, meaning that any direction, any situation where there's something wrong being done, there's an obligation on the individual to rebuke, obviously in the proper manner, you're saying, show, has to be done, each one in its context done properly, but there is an obligation to rectify the situation. Azov tazov imo. Right, so here there's an obligation, right, we're going to see the Gemara coming up, but there's an obligation to help an individual when he has a load on his animal, to be parek and toain. Parek means to unload the animal and to load the animal. To help him load and to help unload. We're not going to explain which one is which here. We're going to see the Gemara later on, which is in which direction. Say, Azov tazov imo. You must help along with him. In leila balav imo. How do I know that he has to help them when the owner is there? That would be shein balav imo minayin. How do I know when the owners aren't there that you also have to help out? No matter what. Even if the owners are not there to help out, to load it or unload it, you still have to do that activity. So that's very good. So we're going to see the Gemara is going to darshan later on that imo means that if the balim sit down on the side of the street and say, listen, buddy, you have a mitzvah, do take care of it, I'm not getting involved, that you can walk away. Because it says imo with him. Right, so the drasha.
What if the baal is just not capable?
So that's what Tosa says on the top of the next Talmud. He says you can do with the chol and a zakein. That's what the Gemara is going over here. When it's a chol or a zakein, where he's unable to do that work, then there's still an obligation on you. Even though it can't be imo, there's still an obligation on you to help out, to be toin or to be purik. Okay, hakein takim imo. Right, again, here it sounds like he's lifting it up. There'd be toin the animal. In the other balav imo. Again, you think only when the owners can help out or with you. Shein balav imo minayin. How do you know when the owners are not there that you still have to do it? Tamaloma hakein takim mikol makom. Again, the double lashon teaches you that even in a situation where you think you were patur, nevertheless you are chayav. Why do I need two separate psukim to teach me one about loading the animal and one about unloading the animal? Why do I need both of them? Had the Torah simply written prika, unloading the animal, the reason that we over there demand of you to help out, one is because they're tzar balei chayim, which is the animal is under duress because it's overloaded and it needs to be unloaded at this time. Number two is there's chisaron kis, the animal could be wounded or hurt by the fact that it's overloaded at this point in time. So for both of those reasons, the Torah demands of you to help to unload the animal. About te'ina, when we're talking about loading up the animal, the lav tzar balei chayim, first of all, there's no tzar balei chayim ika because the animal's not loaded yet, so you don't have to do anything. Lo chisaron kis, and again, there's no loss over here because the animal will not collapse under the load because there's no load on it at this point. Ika, neither of those are there. Emalo, I wouldn't have to do it. V'yishmina te'ina, had it just simply told me about loading the animal, mishom demschar. Because we're going to see later on in the Gemara that you can get paid for it. You can actually get paid. When it comes to porek, when it comes to unloading the animal, you cannot demand payment for helping out in that instance. Whereas when it comes to loading the animal, you can demand payment for helping out in that instance. About prika de
b'china.
So therefore, if the Torah had only told me about tina, I'd say the reason the Torah obligates you by tina to help out is because you're going to get paid for it. But by prika, where it's b'china, the Torah can't demand of you to give up your time and go and do it for free.
But
same with lo tricha.
You get paid for it, and the Torah didn't mention prika. How would you know that you don't also get paid?
Shimon d'amar. The Shimon who says af tina b'chinam. Right. So your question, because the Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that both tina and prika are done for free, meaning that there is no difference between them. Then what are you going to say? My the meikvar says Rabbi Shimon lo misayim meikra. So according to Rabbi Shimon, he's not clear, and this is what I was discussing when we first started this, Shimon is not clear which of the psukim is prika and which is tina. He thinks you can read azot tazov imo, as well as hakim takim imo, either to mean prika or tina. So it's not clear to him which is which. So, had the Torah only written one, you could automatically said it is prika. Whichever pasuk the Torah picked would be prika, and then you would never have known tina. Since both of them are ambiguous, And if you were to choose which one, you would automatically say prika because that's sarpa lechayim, right? And it has the damage to the animal. So if you automatically would pick prika, then you would never know te'ina. So that's the way Rabbi Shimon will explain it. So Mara says, now, lama li the mikhtav hanitarti at all? Why do I need prika and te'ina at all? But lama li mikhtav aveda, because I also have aveda. And I have three psukim that are basically telling me the same thing, which is I have hasharat aveda, I have prika and te'ina. Three psukim, which occasionally can tell me, take care of your friend's property. Help him out. Help him so he doesn't lose money. So why do I need all three? The if tavana of mana hanikarte had the Torah only taught us about prikantina mishum de tzara demara ita, right? Tzara dida ita. By the case of the prikantina, there are two issues. One is that the animal is under duress, and either because it's overloaded or because it's not loaded, it won't be loaded properly. And the balin and the owners are bizarre. They're over there because they're trying to load it up, but they're trying to unload it. I mean that they're also in a position of somewhat duress because they're trying to deal with the situation that's in front of them. Aval, aveda, the tzara demara ita. When it comes to aveda, the only person in pain right there is the balim who lost it. Abatzara dida leta, but the object that's lost isn't necessarily in pain. Right? It's just not right. It's not in its proper location. It's not at home. But it doesn't mean that it's in pain. It doesn't mean that it's in a bad situation. Same alos, I would say, maybe you don't have to return it. So therefore, the
Kedishim... A part of running for the Kremim...
So that would eliminate all other Avedot. That would be only times of injury would you return the Avedot. So the Torah says, no. V'yashmin Avedah, Addison, they told us about an Avedah, Mishum Pelet Olamar V'Hadah. The reason you have to return the Avedah is because the owner's not there. The owner's not there. There's no way the object's going back to the owner. The only way to get it back is for you to intervene. On the other hand, when it comes to prekaratina, v'alhani tarte to the marvada, emalotzricha, when the owner is there, let him say, go hire people to help you out. Why should I have to do this for free? Why should the Torah demand of me to help you out? You're here, you're aware of the situation. Call up the workers, bring in the laborers, they'll help you out and take care of the situation. So that's what we need, both types. We need prekaratina and we need a veda to teach us the chiddush in each case. Now, motumat, additional double lishonot. Right, the motumat amaket. Right, someone who kills, he has to be put to death. So what is that? Alright, so here's somebody who killed, he's on the death row, and then, in the other mitak tuvapo, I would think only in the mitah which is saif, right, he says he should be killed in the manner, or the way the Torah lays out the punishment for this individual. What happens if you can't kill him? You can't put him to death in the way that he's supposed to be put to death, according to Torah. Shata rashay lemito, b'chumita shata yuchol amito. How do I know that you can kill him in a manner or a way that is in what? Any way, or any way that you can kill him. Tamalomar motumat, mikol makom. No matter how you kill him, ensure that he's dead. So Rashi comes up, it's amazing. Rashi has a hechitimsi here. The case is, he's supposed to be put to death by saif, right, by the sword. Now, what happens? He runs away. So now he's on a boat, and he's running away on the boat. And you have a bow and arrow, and you can shoot him with the arrow to stop him from escaping here in the boat.
Or,
so you're entitled
or,
to, or, right, or to a boat, to sink the boat. Right, so that there is, that the, that's what I'm saying to you, the hechitimsi here, the case has to be a case where they've already, this is, I don't think the Torah is condoning vigilantism where it says, oh, I thought he was a killer, or we think he's a killer, and he's running away. It has to be after a psak based. It has to be where he was, there was a gmar din that he's put to death, and now he's trying to escape. So now that this is a person who's on death row, he's trying to escape, so then we entitle you to kill him anyway.
I'm saying, someone was Mechal Shabbos, and he's Chayav Skila.
Right.
It's all about it. It's the same gosh. I could say, not only the
Yuriyah. I would say the reason that it's Miuchad, why I don't think it has to do with any punishment, is because there's something unique about killers, which is the Torah says that if you don't, right, kill the killers, then the Aretz, right, the Aretz cannot accept, right, it'll be Dam, right? Dam Shulcho. Otherwise, the Torah is going to spit, the land's going to spit you out because you don't take care of it. I think there is a din miuchad when it comes to killers that we don't accept and we do not want the killers to remain in the land. And the Torah makes an explicit statement about that. I think that's maybe why the focus on a killer rather than any death penalty as a whole. But the Torah does say it by, Lotoki Aretz Etchem, by Erayot, by the, right, it also does say it there. Alright, Haketake, this is by Irani Dachat. This is only with the death penalty that's supposed to be by Yerani Tachat. Any way to put them to death, whatever it is, the Yerani Tachat gets to get rid of it. No matter what, you have to eliminate this Yerani Tachat. Hashev Tashiv. Right, you have to return the object. This is talking about someone who took a mashkon, someone who took collateral on a loan. You have to return the collateral each time. Right? It's ain li elo shemashkano b'rishut beit din. That's only if he took the collateral with permission from Beis Din. Mashkano shelo b'rishut beit din. If he takes the mashkon without permission from Beis Din, meaning that he took it personally, meaning that he himself took it. Minayin, how do you know that he has to return it? No matter how you came into possession of this collateral, you must return the collateral. What's the case? We'll see in a second. Again, this is the case of taking collateral. Again, if he took the collateral with permission. Right? What happens if he takes the collateral without permission, without basically being involved? Minayin, tamalomar, chavol tachbo, mikol makom. You have to return it no matter what. The case where the Torah explicitly says it is a case where a shliach Beis Din goes, takes it out, hands it to you, and there the Torah says, there is when you have to return it.
And you get
so two possibilities. One is what you're suggesting, that only there do you get the mitzvah to say return. Or, possibilities that only when it's done in the context of Beis Din is an obligation to return it. If it's not done in the context of Beis Din, meaning that the other person didn't refuse, you went in there, and they gave you the collateral. If they gave you the collateral without Beis Din intervening, then maybe you don't have to return that collateral in that point. Alright, so now the Gemara says, Vani Trik Rai Lomali. What do I need these two psukim? Meaning that I just brought you two psukim to tell you that both two times that I have to return an item to the owner when it's given to me by Beis Din, and even if it's not given to me by Beis Din. Why do I need two psukim? Chad v'sut yom, chad v'sut laila. Again, this is not, our Gemara will deal with it later on, but the Torah describes, in that case, two different issues. One is if you take his pajamas as collateral, then every night you've got to return his pajamas so he can sleep in them, and then you take them back in the morning. Whereas if you took his clothes, his, you know, day clothes, or you took his suit, or you took his work utensils, then every morning you got to return him his work utensils or his clothes so he can wear them, and then you take them back at night. So the obligation is on both sides. Whether it's night or daytime, we obligate you, the taker of the collateral, to ensure that this individual each day gets his item back. Now, patoach tiftach et yetcha, right, that here you have to give tzedakah. I only know if it said patoach that you have to give tzedakah, that would only be for the aniyim, the poor people in your city. How do I know you have to also give tzedakah to people in a different city? And you have to give it no matter what. You have to give tzedakah, even when it's not your own city, it's not your own aniyim. Even though, or although, there's still priority given to the aniyim yircha before aniyim yircharet. Now don't detain. You must give it to him. Ainly, I mean, again, this is with tzedakah. You have to give them the object. Ainly ele matana buba. I would only thought where the gift or the tzedakah is of a sufficient value or sufficient number that it makes a difference. That's when you have to give tzedakah. Matana mu'etet minayin. How do I know that even when it's a token gift, it's a small amount of tzedakah, like when you put a shekel into the tzedakah box, if I give a small amount of tzedakah, that it still classifies as tzedakah, or that you're still obligated to give it? No matter what, you have to give the tzedakah. Ek tanik, this is by an Eved Ivri, this is why we learn in Kiddushin, an Ek tanik, when you let, after the Eved Ivri works for you 6 years, and then he goes free, the time that he goes free, not only do you set him free, but you also have to give him monetary means so that he can stand on his own. So that's Hanek Tanik. You have to give him additional money when he leaves. Where it says Hanek Tanik, because Hashem blessed you, because blessed your house because of him. So the Torah says it because Hashem blessed your house because of him. It sounds like the only way you have to give him this value is if things went well while he was here because of him. If your house did better or your monetary situation improved because of this Evid, then when he leaves, you give him a bonus. When he leaves, then he takes it along with him. But maybe if it wasn't, Manikin. Then you give him extra. Loni baruch abayit biglalo. What happens if it's not because of him that things got better? Minayin, how do you know? No matter what, you have to give him support. You have to give him an ability to stand on his own when he leaves. And according to Belaz ben Azariah, who says, the only time you have to give him this bonus or give him this support is when things went well because of him. Loni baruch abayit biglalo ain't manikin. But if things didn't go well because of him, you don't give him money. Tanik lamali, what's the double lashon for? It says dibra torak l'shon bnei adam. That the Torah is speaking l'shon bnei adam. That's the way people speak. It's a literary style. There's nothing to learn from it. It's simply a literary style. Oh, very good. All right. So Tosfos asks your question. Tosfos says, how do we know when to say dibra torak l'shon bnei adam? And how we know when to say that there's a limud from these lashonot? Because even Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and you see from this whole Gemara doesn't ever bring it up. Dibra Torah k'lashon bnei adam. All of a sudden, now it pops up. Dibra Torah k'lashon bnei adam. So Tosa says, Eishlomar, Davka Hocha, Bahani Tre Cry, I'm reading Dibra Torah Shmin Adam, Shum de Muchachoy Cry. The Pasuk is self evident that that is the case. Dechtiv, De Machsero, Ubidachtiv Asher Barachacha. The Torah modifies the double Lashon, and by modifying the double Lashon, we're going to see in a second, there's another case where the Gemara is going to say, Dibra Torah Lashon Bin Adam. In both of these cases, the Torah modifies the verbs that it uses, and the modification of the verbs clearly indicates that the verbs only apply in that unique case. So for instance, Aneg Tanik. Aneg Tanik says right after, Asher Barach Hashem, that which Hashem blessed you. So since the Torah qualified when Aneg Tanik applies, when you come and say Aneg Tanik does not mean what the Torah is saying. Basically, you're undoing. You're undermining exactly how the Torah qualified those verbs. And by undermining it, then we say Dibra Torah Shem Adam, or Tana will come and say Dibra Torah Shalom Bnei Adam. In other instances, for instance, Motzma, Taket, Taket, when the Torah never qualifies the verbs that are used, in those cases we don't say Dibra Torah Kolei Shem Adam, because your limud or your drasha does not undermine what the core pasuk is saying. So that's what Tosa says. So it says, Avei Tavidenu Dei Machsoro, Magdami Machsoro. You have to support him, you have to give support to him what he's missing. Maybe here it's an ani who needs help, you have to give him support until he's on his feet. Only in a case where he has no money, right? And he has no ability to take money, he has no money for himself, and he's not willing to take a gift from you. He doesn't want to take free money. Then lend the money to him so that he has a means to live. Yeshba, what happens in a case where he has money? And nevertheless, he does not want to use either your money, he doesn't want to accept a gift from you, and he doesn't want to use his own money. I mean that he has savings, that he doesn't want to go into his savings. And number two, is he not willing to accept a gift from you? How do you know then you have to lend him money in that case? That no matter what, you have to lend him money. You have to lend him money even in a case where he has sufficient means to support himself, but he's not willing to use it. You have to support him and lend money to him. So how are you going to collect it back? It's amazing. Rashi says, what happens in that case? So you have to do it. And get the money back after Mita. After he dies, you'll get it back. I mean, that because we know he has money, you know that he has a way to pay it back. So we don't want him to, if he's not willing to take care of himself, he's not willing to go into a savings account, then we'll do it for him after his death. But right now, you can't let him just, you know, go to waste or lose his status.
He could have lived his benefactor.
Right. So assuming, right, it's an amazing thing that we would demand of somebody to lend in this case, rather than just take his money and force him to use his own money. That's the day of it. So, Rabbi Shimon Gamar, so we do have Rabbi Shimon who says, right, Yeshlo, too bad, meaning that in a case where he has the ability to do it himself, and he's not willing to take tzedakah, then too bad. We don't deal with that person like this. So, Tabi Tenu Lamali, again, Divra Torah Lashon Bnei Adam. So then we talk about, the Torah again says the Lishon Bnei Adam. So again, it also says, what does the pasuk say? It says, Avei Tabi Tenu De Machsor Lo. So it sounds like he's missing. Right, De Machsor Lo. So that verb or that qualification. What? Dei Machsoro. Yeah, whatever he's missing. So what do you mean what he's missing? He's missing is, right, that means that he doesn't have. So that verb, that qualification of Eitav Itenu tells me that only when he's missing, not when he has. So if that's the case, then don't, what? Then don't lend to him when it's a case of
where
he has. And if that's the case, Eitav Itenu, we can say Lashon Bnei Adam. So those are two examples where the Gemara asked that question, not in others. Because again, in those two cases, the Torah qualifies the verbs, and the limud goes against that qualification. Haya batel min sela, lo yomar lo ten li sela, ela noten lo scharo kipul el. So our Mishnah says, if he goes and does the Shabbat Veda, he can't go say, listen, I'm normally working at this rate, pay me back the rate that I gave up in order to return your object. He has no right to say that. He can only get paid back kipul el. So what does that mean, kipul el? So tano noten lo scharo kipul batel. Gives him the money like it's a poel that is batel, that's doing nothing. Michael poel batel. What does it mean like a poel batel? Amar Abaye, a poel batel, shotom alacha de batel nina. Like the value you would pay to a poel batel of the work that he was doing. So what does that mean? I mean that it's hard. If I was to say before, I came up, I say, listen, I make, I make that 300, 400 shekel an hour. Again, I took back your aveda, pay me the 400 shekel an hour. He says, no. I'm going to pay you like a poel batel. So if I had said Boel Batel, meaning I would say like a low level worker, a normal laborer, I'm going to pay you like a laborer that comes. So Gemara says no. There's actually an in-between stage. What's the in-between stage? is a stage in which I am willing to, I work at a certain value per hour, and then I'm willing to, if I say to you, stay home, don't do this work, you're out, you're off, you're vacation. Right? So now I'm on vacation, how much money are you willing to take vacation, right, from that work and still get paid? I mean, that's, what's the differential factor? If I say to you, if you come to work, right, you're gonna get paid 400 shekel an hour. If you don't get paid to work, I'll pay you 100, I'll pay you 200. What is the amount that a person's willing to stay home and collect that money? That's it. So that's the amount. That amount of money is what he gets paid. The difference, that's what Rashi describes here. It's the second class Rashi. Kam adam rotze lito, livchot mischaro, libatel mimlacha, zuk veda, shul sikpa. He has to go, he has to do hard work each day. There are demands on him, he has to be there at a certain time. So if he goes every day, that's what he gets paid. If you could tell him, take a vacation, don't work all year, what would be the amount of money that a person's willing to accept to take the vacation instead of go to work? What's that differential factor?
Yeah, the principal person would rather make more money, but
yes.
At a certain point, a person has a choice between not having to work and getting paid.
Right.
And you know, what's the minimum that they
well, there's a threshold at which, lasok b'mlacha kala kazu, and stay home and just return a beidot to people. Then obviously all this is subjective. That's to do with how hard the work is that you have to do in order to get the larger sum, plus how much, right, how heavy and how much scar you would make in that instance. Again, it's all subjective. Again, today it's actually happening. They actually have this problem in America today where the law firms are overstaffed and they have associates which they've hired, but they don't want to fire. They have to pay them, but they don't want to pay them full salary, but they have nothing to do with them. So they actually offer the associates money to stay home. So how much of their salary do they have to offer them to say, listen, don't come to work and stay home? So what is that, you know, rather than firing them, they say, how do I start to pay you? So there's a differential, is it one third of your salary? We pay you one third of your salary and you stay home, are you okay? So there is a threshold by which people will stay home, get paid, right, and still be qualified, be quote unquote employed. Right, so that's that's exactly what this Gemara is after. That differential of pay or that threshold where it covers over.
Just as a note, Tosfos over here brings up a issue that we've seen in Tosfos and other places, that the Gemara has a principle that Mavriach Arim Nechsei Chavero is Patur. That if you chase away a lion from taking or stealing or ruining your friend's property, he does not have to compensate you for that action, that voluntary action that you took. He doesn't need to compensate you. So Tosfos wants to know, why Baveda do you have to compensate the individual? Again, it should be the equivalent of Mavriach Ari, that a person who is chasing a lion away, where you take voluntary action. If you take a voluntary action, you're not entitled to compensation. So the Rabbeinu Tam has a slightly different nuance in it, but the basic approach that the Re takes is that when do we say Mavriach Ari is patur? That's only when, for instance, you save him from the fear of a lion coming. That he jumps ahead and the person's afraid that this lion will come and then attack. And if you chase away the lion, then he's not entitled to compensation. Because there's not Bari Hazekah. It's not clear that there will be damage or problems caused by this lion. But in a case where you actually save from the lion, or in a case where you actually are preventing a loss from happening, in that instance, you are entitled to compensation because there it's very chazek, it's clear that there would be a loss. And same thing over here. By the Aveda, if you're taking care of the Aveda over here to the benefit of the individual causes you a loss because you're giving up your opportunity for compensation or work in another place, then you're entitled to be compensated by the Bal Aveda. On the other hand, if you are unemployed, if you had no other work otherwise, they're not entitled to get compensated because there is no Bari Hazeka. There is no loss being caused by the fact that he is now being metapel in your Aveda. Those are just with other cases and other nuances in the cases, and also brings a machlokas about property being seized from Jews. These are a sugyot from other places, but the general principle, the general idea that the Re distinguishes in Mavriach Minari, when are you putter, when you chayv, has to do with whether it's Bari Hazeka, whether there's real loss at hand. In that case, you're entitled to compensation. If there is no real loss at hand, or if it's not, there's uncertainty about the loss, then you would not be entitled to compensation.
So now it says, Im she'esham beis din matneh b'fineihem. If there is there a beis din over there, then he can, but matneh b'fineihem, he can make a tznai in front of them. They had a partnership, right? They worked in a partnership. Rav Safra wanted to divide up the partnership, he wanted to dissolve the partnership, so he dissolved the partnership without telling Isur. He did it in front of two Eidim. I wasn't trying to steal, he went ahead and got two Eidim and he does it. After the coming to Rabbi Baravuna, so Isur brought him in front of Rabbi Baravuna and says, listen, he split it up without my knowledge, is it effective? I'm like, Go bring us the three people that you did it in front of. He says, Inami, train me, go flat, or bring at least two out of the three that can tell us that there were three people there. There was a Beis Din. Inami, train sadly, the Pakut Papet Laitat, or bring us two witnesses that you actually divided this in front of a Beis Din. Samalei, Nalacha. So, Rav Safra says back to Rav Aruna, where do you know that? That you need a Beis Din to dissolve a partnership. He says, Amalei, that's not our Mishnah. Im Yesham Beis Din, Matne Bifneim. Im Sham Beis Din, right? Bifneim, Yitzneh, Shalom Kodim. Our Mishnah says that if there's a Beis Din there, and he has work to do, and he doesn't want to give up his money, meaning that the value of his work is greater, or at least equivalent to the Abeda, how do we know that he can go ahead and demand payment for his services at full value from the Abeda? That's in a case where there's a Beis Din sitting there. If there's no Beis Din sitting there, what do we say? We say, walk away from the Aveda. Shelo Kodin. You have a right to go make the more money or take the more value here. And you can walk away from the Aveda because there's no way you can get compensated for what you're losing. He says, Rav Safra says back to Rav Huna, Malay Midomi. How can you compare these cases? Over there, basically what you are doing when you return the Aveda, you're obligating the Baal Aveda to pay you, to compensate you. So if you want to obligate another individual, sure you need a Beis Din to obligate. If you're moving money from one party to the next, right, then to obligate someone to have to pay, to indebt somebody, right, to force them into compensating, but then you need a Beis Din. Of a hocha, didei shakli, guli milsu ba'almahu, betrei sagile. Over here, all I'm doing is dividing up our property. What I'm taking belongs to me. I'm not taking anything that belongs to Isur. I'm simply dividing up I'm dissolving the partnership. I'm taking what belongs to me. And that's all that is a gilui milso. All we're trying to determine is what's my 50% and what is his 50%. We're not to take any money that doesn't belong to either of us.
If what was a strict division of the property, then why would Israel have any objection to it? Obviously, he considered the way that it was divided up to...
He's definitely not taking money from him. It's just, maybe he says, I'd rather have the other 50%. I want the 50% you took, not the 50% I took. Not that there's more value in it, but I just want that.
There must be.
He says, I like that side of the field better than this side of the field, whatever it is, but it's not value. It's not that he's taking money away from him. It's a personal preference. It could be personal preference. All right, so now, Teda, how can I prove this to you? That's not, we have a Mishnah. Amanah mocheret shelo bifnei beis din. Amanah, who's left in the estate, a widow, who's left in the estate, and is allowed to sell the estate to feed herself. She's allowed to sell items out of the estate to feed herself. So over there we say that she's allowed to do that even without a beis din. So you see that you can, in a case where there's no loss cause, she's selling out property. So Abaye says, what are you talking about? Over there it says, right, she doesn't need a basin. What does it mean? She doesn't need a basin of mumchen, she still needs lay people, a basin. Right, so there's difference, there are three different levels of distribution or monetary movement. There's a Edim, where you have witnesses. Witnesses only deal with cases of Gilui Milsa. Now, when you're talking about selling property, you're talking about moving, making monetary decisions. And when that comes to a Beis Din, there are two levels of Beis Din. There's a Beis Din Shel Hadyodot. There are Beis Dins of lay people. Lay people, Beis Dins of lay people can deal with things like dissolving partnerships, and they can deal with items like an almanah who's selling out of an estate. But then there's also Beis Din Shel Mumchen, where we need Mumchen is where when you're trying to extract money from somebody, or you're trying to do something beyond, which is that you have to be sham, you have to assess the real value here, because there's a significant issue at hand. There you need Beis Din Shel Mumchen, because there's a determination that needs to be made in terms of valuing the object. Tosus over here deals with the possibilities over here in terms of what you have to do. Depends how you sell it, maybe sometimes. Meaning that maybe you don't need a Beis Din of Mumchen when you're selling it out to a third party. You can use lay people and sell it out to a third party, because then the market price is being determined, number one, by the sale, because someone else is buying it, and you have a Beis Din over there of Hedjotot. Between those two things, we ensure that the item is sold properly. Whereas if you buy it for yourself, so for instance, you say, listen, whether it's the Almanah, or whether it's the person who finds the Aveda, and says, listen, I have to sell it because otherwise it's not going to preserve its value. I'll buy it for myself. Right? So now I'm self-dealing. When I'm self-dealing, then there's a lot more suspicion that there's something wrong. In that case, maybe you need a Beis Din Shel Mumchen to be Shamit, to assess the value, because only in a case where there's a Beis Din Shel Mumchen are going to let you do a self-dealing. And Tosfos even suggests that we have possibly, even with the Beis Din of Mumchen, it would not be sufficient. That's the conclusion. Tosfos has a conclusion here that you can never self-deal because of the suspicion that there is some value being lost or extracted over here, and we don't want it to look that way. Whether it is or it isn't, we don't like you to self-deal, because there's always questions about people who self-deal in these items. Right, we'll stop over here.